welcome into the midweek edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. It is an Anything Goes Wednesday, and it's also, believe it or not, our 50th show here on the Doug Russell Podcast as well. And I'm kind of glad that the 50th show that we do falls on an Anything Goes Wednesday that also falls on a day of historic significance. And I'll tell you why. Because when I originally conceived of the idea of doing a podcast, I wondered how many shows should I do? And I asked a lot of folks. Maybe you were one of those that voted on some of the polls that I would put out. How often, if I do a podcast, how often would you want to hear from me? And it fell between 2 and 3 times a week. Because, listen, I get it. Every day's a bit much. Even for me, it's a bit much. But I wanted to do Monday shows and Friday shows that were centered around Wisconsin sports, because that's probably what you're here for. And if you've heard me on not only Milwaukee sports radio stations, because I've been on all of them, or some of the other stations around the state, whether it is on currently the Game Radio Network, which is run out of Milwaukee, out of 97.3 The Game and iHeartMedia, or maybe the Packers or Brewers radio networks, maybe Wisconsin Radio Network as well. You probably know me for sports. Great. We're going to do a Monday show about Wisconsin sports. We're going to do a Friday show about Wisconsin sports. But I also kind of wanted to do something that was off the beaten path. I wanted to do what I called an Anything Goes Wednesday edition of the show, because even if you're a huge sports fan, and again, if you're listening to me at all on a podcast, the chances are you probably are a big Wisconsin sports fan, but you have other interests as well. I have other interests, and one of my interests is history. So we're going to do some sports history today, but also, look, history was made today outside of the world of sports. We have a new president, and we have a new vice president. We do, even on Anything Goes Wednesdays, we keep this show at least apolitical. But certainly, if we do dive into politics, I try to keep it as bipartisan as possible. You don't want to hear me opine about politics. Few people do. Most people in my family don't want to hear me opine about politics, because that's all that we've been arguing about as a nation, as a people, for the last, I wouldn't even say, look, the election cycle's been, what, about a little bit over a year? We've been arguing about politics for more than a year. We've been arguing about politics for more than 4 years, the last presidency. We've been arguing about it for at least 20 years, maybe, and it's gotten really bad. It's gotten to the point where friends and family relationships have been lost. You've got lifelong friends that don't speak to each other anymore. You've got family members who are at one point, you know, a beloved part of your inner circle, that because you have different worldviews, you're not even able to be in the same room anymore. And I think that's tragic. So, like I said, I try to keep the show apolitical, or at the very least bipartisan political. But since this is such an historic day, we're going to mark it as such. I'm going to link the times in the description of today's show of the following speeches, because we're going to hear from both presidents that were in office today. Now, I don't know exactly what time it's going to be as I'm recording this right now. But again, if you want to listen to President Biden's speech, I will tell you in the description what time President Biden's speech is going to start in this podcast. If you don't want to listen to President Biden, you'd rather listen to President Trump, I'll give you that time as well. And you can skip ahead. No hard feelings. We're going to go with the current president first. After that, the final remarks as president that Donald Trump made this morning. And if you don't want to listen to any of them, if you don't want to listen to either one of them, as I like to say, no hard feelings. All right, we begin, though, with a look back, not at politics, not at the presidency, but we look back at what we were all talking about just 2 years ago. The aftermath of the hiring of Matt LaFleur as Packers coach. Of course, we now know that it was a grand slam of a hire. But sometimes you just don't know. Most of the time, you just don't know. But 2-13-3 regular seasons, two straight trips to the NFC Championship game later, that's an unprecedented run of success for a new Packers coach. And this year's run isn't done yet. So what were we all saying then? What were Matt LaFleur's challenges? What were our initial impressions? I went back into the archives to see what I was saying, beginning with the first time I ever had a chance to speak to Matt LaFleur while on WTMJ's Wisconsin's Morning News with Gene Miller.
And speaking of bodies, we have the body of the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers with us live, that being Matt LaFleur. Good morning, Coach. Congratulations. Welcome aboard.
Hey, good morning. I'm fired up to be here.
Glad to have you, sir. So first question, I guess, for me is, having never been a head coach in the NFL myself, I'm asking you, who is now stepping into the position for the first time, where do you put the first shovel in the ground? What's the first thing you have to do?
I think the first thing that we're doing right now is we're trying to really formulate our staff and reach out to all our players, because ultimately this game is about players, and just want to endear myself to those guys.
I know you've spoken with Aaron Rodgers, and look, he predates almost everyone in the building. He's obviously headed to Canton, but he's also gotten a reputation as we'll call him a headstrong player at times. How do you, as the new guy, reach out to a guy like Rodgers and reach a guy like Rodgers?
Yeah, I just think it comes down to, you know, just working on developing our relationship and getting to know him. And I'll tell you what, I am so excited to get an opportunity to work with a guy like Aaron Rodgers.
We're live with the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur, on WTMJ.
Coach, I know you and wife Brianne have two boys, Luke and Ty, and I'm just wondering, do their football loyalties travel with you? Is it just whoever dad's working for, or they have an age now where they're deciding they're on their own favorite teams?
Oh, no, they were all decked out in their Green Bay Packers uniforms the other day, and I'll tell you what, the biggest I guess the thing they were most excited about were the cheeseheads.
What do you say to the sports talk shouters and some of the doubters out there? They look at what the Titans did last year offensively, and they say you don't have any head coaching experience. How do you appease those early critics?
Yeah, you know, that's always a fair question. I think when you look at what we did last season, there was a lot of adversity. Certainly we're never going to make excuses about, you know, injuries or whatnot. But the bottom line, this game's about winning football games. And, you know, we were able to accomplish and win 9 games. Unfortunately, we didn't make it to the playoffs, which that is certainly the goal, is to get to the playoffs, and then we'll see what happens after that. But fell short of that, but I think there were a lot of positives out of Tennessee.
Coach, you've had a lot of stops in your career. I'm interested in the one at Notre Dame, because I think it's the closest thing to replicating the experience in Green Bay, where football is really the identity of not only the town, but it's also got a nationwide and a worldwide even type of following. What can you take from your experience there that will help you in Green Bay?
Yeah, certainly. What a great experience it was to be at Notre Dame. You're talking about a global brand, just like the Green Bay Packers, you know, very similar in terms of the town, and it was just such a great experience. And I just think that you are an ambassador for a global brand, and I think that's what I took away the most.
We're live with the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur, on WTMJ. Your roster as of this morning is going to be far different when you take to the field for the season opener at Lambeau Field in September. What do you think you need the most as you look at your team right now? Where are the biggest holes you have to fill?
Yeah, certainly. We're still in the evaluation phase, you know, and, you know, I'm working well with Goody here. I feel very, very confident in our player personnel department, and that's something that we'll get into more as we move forward.
We're live with the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur, on WTMJ. What do you do when you're not doing football, Matt? What's fun for you?
Right now, it's been all ball all the time. So, you know, I really enjoy just hanging out with my family, and you know, this is the third year one that I'm going to have in a row now. So it's been a pretty hectic last 3 years, but you know, this is a big job in front of us, and we're going to attack it head on. And just like I said before, we're just in that phase right now where we're really trying to just fill out our staff.
And small town life won't be a surprise to you. You're from these parts, technically Michigan.
Oh yeah, I love the Midwest. I'll tell you what, I love everything about the Midwest. The people are, the people here have been absolutely fantastic. They're so friendly, and that it's very similar to the hometown that I grew up in Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Matt LaFleur, the new head coach of your Green Bay Packers, joining us live on WTMJ. Coach, good luck. Let's stay in touch.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right. From there, welcome back to 2021, by the way. From there, I walked down the hallway at Radio City to join Brian D over on 94.5 ESPN.
My initial impression of Matt LaFleur after his introductory press conference, during which Mark Murphy spoke for like an hour before we actually got to hear Matt LaFleur talk, was not as confident as I imagined he would be. The image I had painted for myself in my head, and this is my fault, was that he was going to be as confident as Sean McVay is in his press conference settings, right? And that made me nervous. And that's entirely my fault. I acknowledge that.
But that's what we all want. We all want Sean McVay. I'm not just saying Wisconsinites. I'm not just saying Packers fans. I'm saying everybody in the NFL right now, especially the teams that have gone through a coaching change this offseason. The Browns still don't have a coach yet, do they?
They hired Freddie Kitchens.
That's right, Freddie Kitchens.
The only team without a coach, I believe, is the Cincinnati Bengals, and they're close to hiring Zach Taylor, I believe.
Right.
So everything is about buttoned up at this point. But look at Zach Taylor.
The drummer from the M-Bop Kid? So anyway.
That's Hanson.
Right. But there was a Zach and a Taylor.
Yes, there were.
And their last name was Hanson. So I think everyone...
But he's an offensive dude, right? He's a young...
He's a Rams guy.
He's a young offensive dude.
Quarterback's coach for the Rams. So I think everybody, all eight teams that have gone through a coaching change this offseason, they're trying to land Sean McVay 2.0. Here's the problem with that. There's only one Sean McVay, and he's a football nerd. And when I say that with the utmost amount of respect and love, because that's what everybody else wants. Everybody wants the guy who's going to be spitting plays that he called 4 years ago. Everybody wants a guy who can talk a mile a minute, but talk with such confidence and passion and conviction and can lead a team. You see this guy at the front of the room, and he's got that team in the palm of his hands, right? You see that. You know that. You feel that in the results are borne out on the field. I know they had a little bit of a hiccup in December. We'll see how they do coming up this weekend in the playoffs.
I want to talk about that in a minute.
But everybody wants that X factor, that, ooh, what do we got here? He's this 32-year-old wunderkind who has got this team and innovative offenses, and his grandfather was the head coach of the Giants and then a general manager with the 49ers. He grew up. It's in his blood. That's what everybody wants. And when you come up short of that, no matter how short it is, even if it's just that short, you're like, yeah, all right, it's not Sean McVay, but that's what everybody hopes for.
Right. He underwhelmed my Sean McVay expectations, and once again, entirely my fault for expecting him to be that way. But I listened to your interview this morning on Wisconsin's Morning News on 620 WTMJ, and I felt better. You guys got human moments out of him. He talked a little bit about his family. He sounded more confident and comfortable, which made me more confident and comfortable in him. What was your biggest takeaway from talking to the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers this morning?
I don't, and this is a criticism. I didn't necessarily greatly love the answer that he gave to me about when I asked him how to reach Aaron Rodgers. Said he was looking forward to working with him. He's the guy. He's important to the team. And then he just kind of turned the page. It's like, okay. That was a little more political than I was hoping for. And I like the human moments.
Yeah.
I liked all of that. But
what answer would you have wanted? What's
the
perfect answer to that question?
I don't know what the perfect answer is. I didn't get it, though. The perfect answer would have entailed something about, we are going to sit down, we are going to get this thing figured out, we're going to make sure that we are all on the same page, no matter how long it takes, and as Aaron Rodgers goes, so go the Green Bay Packers. I understand this. He understands this. Everybody in Wisconsin understands this. Everybody in the NFL understands this. And we're gonna fix this. We're gonna get this figured out. That's in so many words what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. So my answer to that question, if I was Matt LaFleur, I think would have been, listen, it doesn't happen overnight. I just got to go in there and do my best and earn the trust of not just 12, but everybody in the locker room. It's not going to be a lunch meeting or a five-hour long meeting where we sit down and break down every single snap that you took last season and figured out what went right and what went wrong. There's going to be moments for that and time for that, but that type of stuff doesn't happen overnight. He's got to earn that trust and that respect over the course of days, weeks, months, years as the Packers head coach. So I wasn't as bothered by that answer maybe as you were in what you were searching for, though.
Well, and at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what I think. At the end of the day, all that matters is how he leads this team. At the end of the day, all that matters is Aaron Rodgers as good as he can possibly be, because he's got more talent in his right arm than most NFL players have ever had in their entire bodies. Mm-hmm. He was gifted with that. The gods came down and go all Bull Durham on you, but they blessed with a lightning bolt his right shoulder. But until he can get back to being the highest paid player in the NFL and play like the highest paid player in the NFL and play like the franchise, because we certainly didn't see that this year, even though he had that great interception-less streak. But there's more to it than that. You've got to hit your receivers when they're wide open on third down. You've got to have the vision that we saw maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. Between 2010 and 2014, those prime years where he won a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl MVP, and two league MVP awards. That's what you need to try to catch for at least a couple of more seasons before he starts his real decline as an NFL quarterback.
I guess mission accomplished there, right? Welcome back to 2021, by the way. Doing a little hop skipping around. Apologies for that. I'll try to make it as linear as possible. But the jury was out on Matt LaFleur 2 years ago, as it should have been. He was absolutely an unknown quantity. An unknown quantity as much as Dan Campbell is with the Lions, or Robert Saleh with the Jets, or Arthur Smith with the Falcons, or Brandon Staley with the Chargers. All first-year coaches that have just been hired in the last 2 weeks. One of them could be better than Lombardi and Belichick. We don't know that. At least one of the four are likely to be fired within 3 years of today. We don't know how they're going to do. We didn't know how Matt LaFleur was going to do 2 years ago when he was hired. 26-6 in the regular season right now with two straight trips to the NFC Championship game. That's success any way you mark it. So 2 years ago, we tried to pick the brains of the experts, going back to Wisconsin's Morning News, starting with legendary Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Packers beat writer Tom Silverstein.
Questions abound concerning Packers head coach in waiting Matt LaFleur, who officially gets named to the post this afternoon. The Journal Sentinel, actually, the news release came out last night. We're going to meet him this afternoon at 3. You can hear that on WTMJ. The Journal Sentinel's Tom Silverstein among those with his hand up, too, with questions. His JS Online column this morning featuring 20 things he's asking about the man who will be charged with turning the team around on the field. He joins us live here on WTMJ. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
You're right that around league circles, it was not a heavily embraced decision, that being the one to hire LaFleur. Many wondered what role Mark Murphy's influence played in picking a 39-year-old with no head coaching experience and only 1 year of play calling experience. It seems a lot of this is the McVay factor, isn't it?
Yeah, no question. You really want to know whether, or I really want to know whether that's what they sought out when they began the search, was someone with that kind of connection. You've heard Aaron Rodgers talk about it a lot, about how much he admires that offense, and whether that was a priority for them to find somebody in that Sean McVay tree, Kyle Shanahan. And you know, the other thing is, did they think they could find another Sean McVay? And I'm not sure that there is another Sean McVay out there. So, but we'll see.
If you could give Matt LaFleur advice on how to reach Aaron Rodgers, what would you tell him?
Oh, boy. Oh, I think you just have to stick with your principles and run your offense and be confident that your offense is going to work. And that I think I would probably not give him as much leeway as Mike McCarthy did at the end in calling plays and trying to get him to run run the offense the way it's meant to be. And I think you have to convince him that it's working, running itself, and that you don't have to do more than what is expected, that the offense will take care of that for you if you just run it the way it should be.
We are live with the Journal Sentinel's Tom Silverstein talking about the ascension of Matt LaFleur as the Packers head coach, the news conference this afternoon at 3 here on WTMJ. You also broached the subject, too, about Mark Murphy. What happens if this hire doesn't work out? Who is he accountable to? I mean, again, too, this could be a great hire, and this could be the continuation of a winning couple of decades that Packers fans could only dream of. But, yeah, what happens if LaFleur isn't the guy?
Yeah, if it's one of these bomb outs like we've seen already in, you know, Denver and Arizona, where after 1-2 years the record is just terrible. And, you know, could you imagine if they've had four straight losing seasons? I would think they'd clean house. That would be my gut feeling, is that the executive committee would finally say, you know, enough is enough, because the fans, you know, they won't put up with another losing season, and the pressure around here would just be enormous.
Aside from being on the same page as Aaron Rodgers, what's job number two for Matt LaFleur?
I think it's actually job number one is to coach the entire team. And I think being on the same page with Aaron Rodgers is not as important as it is with making sure that you're not brought in here just to be Aaron Rodgers' coach, that you're brought in to coach the entire team, and that you can reach all those guys, and that you can show that you're not brought in just for Aaron Rodgers, because there's a lot of guys on that team that want to be coached, that need a head coach, not just Aaron Rodgers. So I think he has to really take command of the team. And, you know, he's not done that before. He's never had that experience. And so that's something we'll definitely be watching.
Tom Silverstein of your Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We got to do this more often. That was fun. Great stuff, Tom. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. Another expert that we tapped, the illustrious Hall of Fame voice of your Green Bay Packers, the great Wayne Larrivee.
Matt LaFleur, the new head coach of your Green Bay Packers, a fact that the team put to paper in a news release last night. The fresh hire meets the media later today. It's a 3 p.m. Q&A that you can hear live right here on WTMJ. And in the days between this, first making it on the interwebs and now becoming a fact, we've heard from literally everyone. Seems like every radio host in Tennessee, any NFL observer around the league has had something to say about this. The only one we haven't heard from yet is the voice of the Packers, Wayne Larrivee, and that is about to end. He joins us live here on WTMJ. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gene.
So what's your take on Matt LaFleur?
Well, he seems to hit all the right boxes in the football side of it, and you have to understand that a big part of it is, how does he fit the culture of the organization? And when you read the quotes from Mark Murphy, they found a coach with the background experience they're looking for, but they're also excited about the person. And, you know, he's the work ethic, and he's a perfect fit for the organization. The same type of thing from Brian Gutekunst. I mean, you know, smart, organized, moving forward, that type of thing. I think that that obviously there were a lot of candidates they considered, but they got a guy that they feel fits the culture of the organization, and that's as big a factor as any other.
How important do you think the Sean McVay connection is?
I have no idea. I assume it's that connection with Kyle Shanahan, the background he has with the elder Shanahan of Washington. I think the whole thing, the whole package on the football side, is what made him attractive to Green Bay. He's worked with a lot of different people, and with a lot of the people who are on the cutting edge of NFL offense today.
Yeah, it's definitely an offensive-minded hire, I would think, Wayne. You look at who they talked to, what, the 11 candidates, the overwhelming majority all came from the offensive side of the ball. That seems to be where Murphy and Gutekunst think the fix is, where the fix has to lie for the Packers moving forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with the connection that they feel Matt can make with Aaron Rodgers. That's so important, and not just with Aaron Rodgers, but with the offense in general. And, you know, that connection between head coach or offensive coordinator and quarterback in today's NFL is so important. And it's not just Rodgers. It's like the same thing down in Atlanta with Matt Ryan, with Mahomes in Kansas City. Name any quarterback of stature, and that is the most important relationship, the coordinator, the play caller, the offensive guy, and the quarterback. And in this case, it's the head coach and the quarterback. So this is going to be very interesting to see, and I'm very optimistic. Matt LaFleur seems to me to have a great background for that.
In your opinion, Wayne, how important is it for LaFleur that he's keeping Mike Pettine and most of, if not all of his staff, maybe from, if nothing else, a continuity standpoint?
I think it's real important, Doug, and I think that when you look at it, and again, you know, the improvement of the defense, when you look at pure numbers, if you didn't see any of the games, was modest from the last Dom Capers defense to this year's. It was modest, but you have to consider that by the end of the season, they were working with three preferred starters on that defensive unit. Injuries had wiped out almost everybody on all three levels, it seemed like, and especially on the defensive line. And the general feeling was, and the consensus around the league from people I've talked to, is Pettine did a heck of a job under adverse circumstances with that defense. And I think he can only get better as we go forward, and they have a little better luck with injuries and add some more talent to that side of the football. I'm really optimistic about that. I think Mike Pettine was a great addition to the staff, and it's good to see that he's going to continue.
We're live with the voice of the Packers, Wayne Larrabee, on WTMJ. With all those injuries, Wayne, and now, you know, with the regime change that's happening, it's really hard to put a finger on just where this team is, at least to this common fan, because you just don't know. Like you said, the level of talent on defense is so good, but we never got to see all the pieces together, and then you just don't know on the offense if Aaron Rodgers can be number 12 again, or if you know, it's not clicking with him and LaFleur.
Yeah, that's going to be the intrigue of I think, you know, the off-season program, when you get into June and the mini camp and then into training camp. But, you know, you have to, at this point in time, I think, really trust the people who have researched this and have made the choices, and that's Brian Gutekunst and Mark Murphy. You trust that they have, you know, they've looked at everybody closely. They feel this is the best fit, and that, indeed, Matt LaFleur will be able to work well with Aaron Rodgers and get this offense back on track. Because really, when you look at it overall last season, the offense, more so than the defense, was the bigger problem.
The only constant, it would seem, in Green Bay for now is change. Fans who wanted it, they got it, and we'll see what happens moving forward. Wayne, always appreciate the time. Take care.
Hey, you bet, guys. All the best.
So by now, we all know how things have turned out in the early going. And we'll have much, much more into the present day. We'll spend the entire Friday show in 2021. We won't go back to 2019, I promise. We'll do that on Friday's show, where we will really dive deep into the NFC Championship game coming up between the Packers and the Buccaneers. We'll hear from Aaron Rodgers. We'll hear from Matt LaFleur. We'll hear from Davante Adams. We'll hear from Tom Brady and more here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Yes, today is a day for history, the peaceful transfer of power. And while it was contentious, and 2 weeks ago violent, the Constitution held. We are not supposed to have riots and insurrection at the Capitol. But politics is not my public sandbox. But today was one of those days in history where we woke up with one president of the United States and the sun set with another. And now it's time to hear from both. First up, the new president, Joe Biden, in his full inaugural address, which we will follow with now former President Donald Trump's remarks before he left Washington this morning. But again, up first, President Joe Biden.
Chief Justice Roberts, Vice President Harris, Speaker Pelosi, Leader Schumer, Leader McConnell, Vice President Pence, my distinguished guests, my fellow Americans, this is America's day. This is democracy's day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause. the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. So now, on this hallowed ground where just a few days ago, violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power as we have for more than two centuries. As we look ahead in our uniquely American way, restless, bold, optimistic, and set our sights on the nation we know we can be and we must be. I thank my predecessors of both parties for their presence here today. I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And I know the resilience of our Constitution and the strength of our nation, as does President Carter, who I spoke with last night, who cannot be with us today, but whom we salute for his lifetime in service. I've just taken the sacred oath each of those patriots have taken, the oath first sworn by George Washington. But the American story depends not on any one of us, not on some of us, but on all of us, on we the people who seek a more perfect union. This is a great nation. We are good people. And over the centuries, through storm and strife, in peace and in war, we've come so far, but we still have far to go. We'll press forward with speed and urgency, for we have much to do in this winter of peril and significant possibilities. Much to repair, much to restore, much to heal, much to build, and much to gain. Few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. Once-in-a-century virus that silently stalks the country has taken as many lives in one year as America lost in all of World War II. Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. A cry for survival comes from the planet itself, a cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy, unity. Unity. In another January, on New Year's Day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. When he put pen to paper, the president said, and I quote, "If my name ever goes down into history, it'll be for this act, and my whole soul is in it." My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this, bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation. And I ask every American to join me in this cause. Uniting to fight the foes we face, anger, resentment and hatred, extremism, lawlessness, violence, disease, joblessness, and hopelessness. With unity, we can do great things, important things. We can right wrongs. We can put people to work in good jobs. We can teach our children in safe schools. We can overcome the deadly virus. We can reward work and rebuild the middle class and make health care secure for all. We can deliver racial justice, and we can make America once again the leading force for good in the world. I know speaking of unity can sound to some like a foolish fantasy these days. I know the forces that divide us are deep and they are real. But I also know they are not new. Our history has been a constant struggle between the American ideal that we're all are created equal and the harsh, ugly reality that racism, nativism, fear, demonization have long torn us apart. The battle is perennial, and victory is never assured. Through Civil War, the Great Depression, World War, 9/11, through struggle, sacrifice, and setbacks, our better angels have always prevailed. In each of these moments, enough of us have come together to carry all of us forward. And we can do that now. History, faith, and reason show the way of unity. We can see each other not as adversaries, but as neighbors. We can treat each other with dignity and respect. We can join forces, stop the shouting, and lower the temperature. For without unity, there is no peace, only bitterness and fury. No progress, only exhausting outrage. No nation, only a state of chaos. This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward. And we must meet this moment as the United States of America. If we do that, I guarantee you we will not fail. We have never, ever, ever, ever failed in America. We've acted together. And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Politics doesn't have to be a raging fire, destroying everything in its path. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured. My fellow Americans, we have to be different than this. America has to be better than this. And I believe America is so much better than this. Just look around. Here we stand in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, as was mentioned earlier, completed amid the Civil War, when the Union itself was literally hanging in the balance. Yet we endured. We prevailed. Here we stand, looking out on the Great Mall, where Dr. King spoke of his dream. Here we stand, where 108 years ago, at another inaugural, thousands of protesters tried to block brave women marching for the right to vote. And today, we mark the swearing-in of the first woman in American history elected to national office, Vice President Kamala Harris. Don't tell me things can't change. Here we stand, across the Potomac from Arlington Cemetery, where heroes who gave the last full measure of devotion rest in eternal peace. And here we stand, just days after a riotous mob thought they could use violence to silence the will of the people, to stop the work of our democracy, to drive us from this sacred ground. It did not happen. It will never happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Not ever. all those who supported our campaign, I'm humbled by the faith you've placed in us. To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America. The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly. Disagreement must not lead to disunion. And I pledge this to you. I will be a president for all Americans. All Americans. And I promise you, I will fight as hard for those who did not support me as for those who did. Many centuries ago, St. Augustine, a saint of my church, wrote that a people was a multitude defined by the common objects of their love. Defined by the common objects of their love. What are the common objects we as Americans love that define us as Americans? I think we know. Opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth. Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and defeat the lies. Look, I understand that many of my fellow Americans view the future with fear and trepidation. I understand they worry about their jobs. I understand, like my dad, they lay in bed staring at the ceiling, wondering, can I keep my health care? Can I pay my mortgage? Thinking about their families, about what comes next. I promise you, I get it. But the answer is not to turn inward, to retreat into competing factions, distrusting those who don't look like you, or worship the way you do, or don't get their news from the same sources you do. We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this. If we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes. Because here's the thing about life. There's no accounting for what fate will deal you. Some days, when you need a hand. There are other days when we're called to lend a hand. That's how it has to be. That's what we do for one another. And if we are this way, our country will be stronger, more prosperous, more ready for the future. And we can still disagree. My fellow Americans, in the work ahead of us, we're going to need each other. We need all our strength to persevere through this dark winter. We're entering what may be the toughest and deadliest period of the virus. We must set aside politics and finally face this pandemic as one nation. One nation. And I promise you this, as the Bible says, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. We will get through this together. Together. Look, folks, all my colleagues I serve with in the House and the Senate up here, we all understand the world is watching all of us today. So here's my message to those beyond our borders. America has been tested, and we've come out stronger for it. We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's challenges. And we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. We'll be a strong and trusted partner for peace, progress, and security. Look, you all know we've been through so much in this nation. And in my first act as president, I'd like to ask you to join me in a moment of silent prayer. Remember all those who we lost in this past year to the pandemic, those 400,000 fellow Americans, moms, dads, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, friends, neighbors, and coworkers. We'll honor them by becoming the people and the nation we know we can and should be. So I ask you, let's say a silent prayer for those who've lost their lives and those left behind, and for our country. Amen. Folks, this is a time of testing. We face an attack on our democracy and on truth, a raging virus, growing inequity, the sting of systemic racism, a climate in crisis, America's role in the world. Any one of these would be enough to challenge us in profound ways. But the fact is, we face them all at once, presenting this nation with one of the gravest responsibilities we've had. Now we're going to be tested. Are we going to step up, all of us? It's time for boldness, for there's so much to do. And this is certain. I promise you, we will be judged, you and I, by how we resolve these cascading crises of our era. We will rise to the occasion is the question. Will we master this rare and difficult hour? Will we meet our obligations and pass along a new and better world to our children? I believe we must. I'm sure you do as well. I believe we will. And when we do, we'll write the next great chapter in the history of the United States of America, the American story, a story that might sound something like a song that means a lot to me. It's called American Anthem. There's one verse that stands out, at least for me, and it goes like this. The work and prayers of centuries have brought us to this day. What shall be our legacy? What will our children say? Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you. Let's add our own work and prayers to the unfolding story of our great nation. If we do this, then when our days are through, our children and our children's children will say of us, they gave their best. They did their duty. They healed a broken land. My fellow Americans, I close the day where I began with the sacred oath. Before God and all of you, I give you my word. I will always level with you. I will defend the Constitution. I'll defend our democracy. I'll defend America. And I'll give all of you, keep everything I do in your service, thinking not of power, but of possibilities, not of personal interest, but the public good. And together, we shall write an American story of hope, not fear, of unity, not division, of light, not darkness, a story of decency and dignity, love and healing, greatness and goodness. May this be the story that guides us, the story that inspires us, and the story that tells ages yet to come that we answered the call of history. We met the moment. Democracy and hope, truth and justice did not die on our watch, but thrive. that America secured liberty at home and stood once again as a beacon to the world. That is what we owe our forebears, one another, and generation to follow. So, with purpose and resolve, we turn to those tasks of our time. Sustained by faith, driven by conviction, and devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts, may God bless America, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, America.
The 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden, in his inaugural address. All right, as promised, in case you missed Donald Trump's final remarks as president, this was from this morning at Joint Base Andrews before Donald Trump departed on Air Force One to Florida one final time.
Thank you very much. And we love you. And I can tell you that from the bottom of my heart. This has been an incredible 4 years. We've accomplished so much together. I want to thank all of my family and my friends and my staff and so many other people for being here. I want to thank you for your effort, your hard work. People have no idea how hard this family worked. They worked, and they worked for you. They could have had a much easier life, but they did a fantastic job. I just want to thank all of you, everyone. I want to thank Mark Meadows, who's here someplace right there. I want to thank Mark. But it's been something very special. We've accomplished a lot. Our First Lady has been a woman of great grace and beauty and dignity. And so popular with the people, so popular with the people. In fact, honey, would you like to say a few words, please?
Being your First Lady was my greatest honor. Thank you for your love and your support. You will be in my thoughts and prayers. God bless you all. God bless your families. And God bless this beautiful nation. Thank you.
What else has to be said, right? But what we've done, that's true, honey, great job. What we've done has been amazing by any standard. We rebuilt the United States military. We created a new force called Space Force. That in itself would be a major achievement for a regular administration. We were not a regular administration. We took care of the vets, 91% approval rating. They've never had that before. The vets have given us, the VA, the vets have given us an approval rating like has never been before. We took care of our vets and our beautiful vets. They were very badly treated before we came along. And as you know, we get them great service and we pick up the bill and they can go out and they can see a doctor if they have to wait long periods of time. We got it so that we can, sadly, get rid of people that don't treat our vets properly. We didn't have any of those rights before when I came on, so our vets are happy, our people are happy, our military is thrilled. We also got tax cuts, the largest tax cut and reform in the history of our country by far. I hope they don't raise your taxes. But if they do, I told you so. And if you look at the regulations, which I consider the regulation cuts to be maybe even more important, that's why we have such good and have had such good job numbers. The job numbers have been absolutely incredible. When we started, had we not been hit by the pandemic, we would have had numbers that would never have been seen. Already, our numbers are the best ever. If you look at what happened until February a year ago, our numbers were at a level that nobody had ever seen before. And even now, we really built it twice. We got hit. Nobody blames us for that. The whole world got hit. And then we built it again. And now the stock market is actually substantially higher than it was at its higher point prior to the pandemic. So it's really, you could say, we built it twice. And you're going to see incredible numbers start coming in if everything is sort of left alone. Be careful. Very complex. Be careful. But you're going to see some incredible things happening. And remember us when you see these things happening, if you would. Remember us, because I'm looking at elements of our economy that are set to be a rocket ship up. It's a rocket ship up. We have the greatest country in the world. We have the greatest economy in the world. And as bad as the pandemic was, we were hit so hard, just like the entire world was hit so hard. Places that thought they got away with it didn't get away with it. They're suffering right now. We did something that is really considered a medical miracle. They're calling it a miracle, and that was the vaccine. We got the vaccine developed in 9 months instead of 9 years or 5 years or 10 years or a long time. It was supposed to take a long time, many, many years to develop a vaccine. We have two out. We have another one coming almost immediately. And it really is a great achievement. So you should start to see really good numbers over the next few months. I think you're going to see those numbers really skyrocket downward. And I can only say this, we have worked hard. We've left it all, as the athletes would say, we've left it all in the field. We don't have to come and say, we'll never say in a month when we're sitting in Florida, we're not going to be looking at each other and saying, you know, if we only worked a little bit harder, you can't work harder. And we had a lot of obstacles, and we went through the obstacles. And we just got 75 million votes, and that's a record in the history of sitting presidents. That's an all-time record by a lot, by many millions. In the history of sitting presidents, it's been really just an honor. One of the things we're very, very proud of is the selection of almost 300 federal judges and three great Supreme Court justices. That's a very big number. That's a record-setting number. And so we've done a lot, and there's still things to do. The first thing we have to do is pay our respects and our love to the incredible people and families who suffered so gravely from the China virus. It's a horrible thing that was put onto the world. We all know where it came from, but it's a horrible, horrible thing. So be very careful. Be very, very careful. But we want to pay great love to all of the people that have suffered, including families who have suffered so gravely. So with that, I just want to say you are amazing people. This is a great, great country. It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president. I will always fight for you. I will be watching, I will be listening, and I will tell you that the future of this country has never been better. I wish the new administration great luck and great success. I think they'll have great success. They have the foundation to do something really spectacular. And again, we put it in a position like it's never been before, despite the worst plague to hit since, I guess you'd say, 1917, over 100 years ago. And despite that, the things that we've done have been just incredible, and I couldn't have done it without you. So just a goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form. And again, I want to just in leaving, I want to thank our Vice President, Mike Pence, and Karen. I want to thank Congress, because we really worked well with Congress, at least certain elements of Congress. But we really did. We've gotten so much done that nobody thought would be possible. But I do want to thank Congress, and I want to thank all of the great people of Washington, D.C., all of the people that we worked with to put this miracle together. So have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Now, former President Donald Trump earlier on Wednesday. Look, as a student of history, I'm endlessly fascinated by our political process. And today is historical in a number of different ways. Of course, the transfer of power. Look, we've had 46 presidents, which means we've had 46 days like this, where we've had the day begin with one president and end with another. In all but a small handful of them, it has been because of the peaceful transfer of power. We've had presidents die of natural causes. We've had assassinations. But this is the ideal way, as much as it was contentious, as much as many would have preferred that there be less of a schism between the former president and the now newly installed president. But still, this is the way that it's supposed to happen. Not with a death, not with an impeachment or a resignation or anything that was violent or in any way, shape, or form untoward. And say what you will about the way that Donald Trump left the White House, it wasn't kicking and screaming, as some had alleged over the summer. It wasn't with the Secret Service escorting the former president out of the White House in handcuffs. It wasn't anything like that. So that was, I think, something that was a talking point months ago, and I never thought that it would happen, and it didn't happen. Again, contentious? Yes. Was it some departure that is going to be burned into our brains and live in infamy? No, it won't be. It was, at the end of the day, a peaceful transfer of power, which is how our Constitution is set up. So that's one part of history. The other part of history is that the first woman and the first person of color is our vice president. So congratulations to Kamala Harris as well, and to her husband, Mr. Emhoff, as we finally get a Doug in the White House. Sort of. Close enough. I'll take it. That's it for today. Lots of Packers talk coming up on Friday as we get you set for the NFC Championship game on Sunday between the Packers and the Buccaneers. Have a great rest of your week. We'll see you on Friday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.